Welcome to the Krieg DeWalt podcast series. As a business leader, navigating the legal landscape can be daunting. That's why we're here to provide you with the insights you need. Join us as we break down the latest news, laws, and trends shaping your industry.
Welcome back to the Krieg DeWalt podcast. Thanks for joining us today. Today is a continuation in a series of podcasts, so those of our regular listeners will remember that my guests today, Chris Bloomer and Blake Holler, have previously done a podcast with me on Indiana lien law and how that can be a powerful tool and ally to construction activities throughout the state. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, George. Happy to be here again.
I think as promised to the listeners, we are going to continue diving into this topic. And I guess as a preview, there's obviously the previous episode out there that they can go listen to and get up to speed. But just as a general preview, Chris, would you just give us just a brief overview of the topic and where this is applicable and how this portion of Indiana law applies to legal needs?
Certainly, George, and good morning. Thanks again for having Blake and myself. We recall the first podcast, as you said, for our regular listeners, really just set the stage for what Indiana lien law looked like here in the state of Indiana. And we previewed coming attractions, and this is one of them, which is delving into more specifics. A lien seems to be an easy tool, an easy instrument for contractors, subcontractors, suppliers, and others. For owners and lenders, it's not such a friendly tool. It's a tool that they would like to have removed and not encumber their real property or their interests. So for today, we envision discussing certain property, what can be the subject of a lien, and also who is entitled to a lien. As we discussed on our first installment in this series, there are a lot of nuances, a lot of gray areas, and you have to fit with very particular specificity into the statute before you can actually hold a lien as to real property.
Yeah, I think that's right. Blake, when you are looking at the lien, before we get to, you know, the nuts and bolts, when you're looking at the lien, obviously it's something, as Chris said, an owner or a lender, anyone that has an interest in the property wants to avoid at all costs. What makes it so powerful? What is it about the lien that essentially makes it something that people fear and want to avoid?
Yeah, thanks, George. The thing that makes the lien so powerful, and we touched on this briefly in the first podcast, but the power in the lien is that it encumbers that property from a sale, from any further action that you want to do. A lot of times it impacts your loan, could impact the mortgage, oftentimes with commercial structures and things like that, where there may have been a large construction loan to build the project. There are terms that the owner has with the lender that they can't allow a lien to be on it. So there's a lot of repercussions, both from the owner's side, and then also if you want to try to sell or transfer that property, that lien is going to get hit on a title search, and that's going to have to get rectified one way or the other if you're going to negotiate that property later.
Yeah. In my practice, I sometimes find myself drafting loan documents for real estate, commercial real estate. And you're right. It is what we call an event of default under the loan documents to allow a lien to occur on the property. And a borrower, owner of a property, would be in default on their loan immediately by allowing the lien. And again, just because I don't want to go into the details or the specifics without a little bit of background for those that maybe haven't listened to it, a lien is created by, in Indiana, how is a lien created?
Sure, I can touch on that, and then I'm sure Chris can delve into it further because he loves the statute. But it is a creature of statute. It was it was enacted by the Indiana legislature long, long ago. It gets revised from time to time. But we touched on this briefly, and the importance of this statute. It is a hyper-technical statute that you have to comply with 100% to a T, otherwise you don't have a valid lien. And so that's why both there's a lot of power in it, but they make you do it correctly to get that power.
Yeah, and the mechanics, no pun intended, for a mechanics lien, the actual encumbrance of real property by a lien in Indiana is carried out through recording in the recorder's office where whatever property is situated, what we call a sworn statement and notice of intention to hold lien. And it's perhaps a little misleading for those that don't do this often, which is a good place to be if you're in the construction industry, to not be doing these very often. but sometimes unavoidable. But that sworn statement, that is what is recorded with the particulars that I know we'll discuss today and in future installments as well. And once that is recorded within the time limitation required by statute, it then affixes and attaches to that real property. It's then effectively a lien as to the property.
All right. So as you go through that process and, you know, there's the nuts and bolts to it, obviously, my advice to my clients who have, you know, who are in the trades, who have a right, and I think that's really a great place to start is, you know, who has the right to place a lien? But before we get there, really, those that are entitled to place a lien on property, my advice is always, even though you think you can go it alone because you think Google can get you there, this really is something that is best done by a legal practitioner with experience doing it. It's funny. I know lawyers that won't touch these because they can mess it up. And that mess up could potentially amount to malpractice. And nobody wants to be in that boat. So if you don't know what you're doing, the best thing to do is to find someone that does know what they're doing. And, you know, I don't do that often on this podcast. People are free to do what they see fit, but there are ways to not move that lien correctly. And then there are consequences of that, aren't there, Chris?
That's absolutely correct. For being such a seemingly straightforward document, many liens in substance are just a couple pages, right? You may have a very large legal description. That's one of the requirements. We can talk about that. But for being so seemingly simple, it has to be 100% accurate. That is what we achieve here, Blake and myself and our construction law team. And it has to be done with super precision. And if I may, I will say, you know, Blake and I, we represent, I know we talk generally, especially for today's topic, with respect to who can hold a lien, who can record a lien, what the requirements are. But when we discussed a moment ago, lenders and owners, we do that work as well. So we often look at the parties to a transaction from a transactional perspective, even before dirt's moved and a lien could encumber the property. We do a lot of that work. But when there's a dispute and things are going sideways or things have gone sideways and a lien is imminent, we'll represent lenders or owners, and their interests are obviously uniquely different from someone who is recording a lien. And then we'll represent our general contractor and subcontractor and material supplier interests as well in these situations.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting to know because it is, in fact, there are defenses to the lien and there are ways to defeat a lien.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And that's one of the things, you know, we can talk about here today, and we can certainly go in deeper detail in further podcasts, but we have seen both sides of the lien, both from the liening side and both from the lien side. And there are things that you can do to create leverage on both sides. But to your question specifically, if you are owner or lender and a project or a property has been liened, some of the first defenses you look at are, is the amount of the lien improperly stated? Is the dollar amount correct? Because if you don't get that correct, it's not a lien. Yeah. Another thing we look at is, did they get the correct property? If they haven't liened the correct property, or if they've improperly liened your property, you have defenses in counterclaims for slander of title and things like that. And so there are a lot of things that we look at depending on which side we're on and depending on, you know, what the nature of the lien is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's very well put. That takes us, I guess, to that, you know, the first section of, all right, let's look at, as we're getting more involved and in depth in these liens, we call them, you heard Chris in the pun, it's great, you know, a mechanics lien. I've heard them called a number of different things, but mechanics lien is in fact the title of the statute. Why are they called mechanics lien? Is it only mechanics? Does it only affect my car? I mean, who's entitled to these things? Who can go out and lien your property? And really, we're talking about real property, yes?
Yes, there are other liens, and Blake and I do have the pleasure of working with those liens as well. They are generally all called mechanics liens. Again, that's a little misleading, as it's not generally a mechanic that's out there improving real property in Indiana that can have a lien. It could be any number of entities. You know, we look at it from a 30,000 foot view when a case or an inquiry comes in, and then we drill down to meet the requirements of the statute. And so it's when we're looking at commercial property, let's say, for example, and you've got your general contractor or your construction manager, those are very commonly subject to taking a lien as to their work on the property. It could also be laborers that are employed by a subcontractor. It could be a supplier. It can also be design professionals. There is a particular statute that tags along with the mechanics lien statute in Indiana that expressly gives professionals the right to hold a, quote, mechanics lien as to the real property that will be or is being improved. So think architects, think engineers, even those entities that seemingly would not be entitled to a lien because their work is often done before dirt's even moved. Their work is in the design. They are entitled to a lien, again, subject to recording it on time and having the particulars as Blake described moments ago.
I want to unpack the process here because for those owners and lenders listening, they're definitely the interesting conundrum with the lien is how to prevent it, right? And when you look at preventing it, you start with, okay, who can do it? And so an owner, generally speaking, contracts directly with a general contractor, right? And then that general contractor has subcontractors who do not contract directly with the owner. They contract with the general contractor. That doesn't change the lien rights, right? Even if the plumber is hired by the general contractor, and for whatever reason, the general doesn't pay the plumber, regardless of if the owner has paid the general for plumbing, the plumber can still file a lien.
Absolutely. And I think that's the strength of the mechanics lien statute and the purpose behind it is because it wants to get the people who have performed work on the subject property paid. And so when that lien gets filed, yeah, it's filed against the owner of the property and the parcel itself. But generally what you'll see happen here is, let's say it's the plumbing trade who has a contract with the general contractor who has a contract with the owner. That owner then has repercussions against the general contractor for not paying them, especially if they've already paid that general contractor for the work. And so what these liens do is, and oftentimes when we're consulting with clients on this, the reason that you file these liens is to apply pressure upstream that then flows back down to the entity that hasn't paid you. Because more often than not, that general contractor or whichever entity it is above you that hasn't paid, they've got relationships at stake with the owner and with other folks that they do business with, and they don't want things like this happening. So more often than not, what you see happen is this lien gets filed, and all of a sudden that owner is putting pressure on the entity that hasn't paid you. And then that starts getting the problem resolved. And that's the purpose of it. And that's what we like to see happen because that's the quickest way to get it resolved.
So it is a pressure point, right? It's a, and Chris, I'll let you jump in here, but it's really, there is a problem and it is notice to everyone of the problem, even though it does end up potentially implicating an owner who might be very innocent in the problem.
Yep. And it's a delicate balance. I think this is a great hypothetical that we're discussing because it's a very frequent one. No construction project is ever perfect. We've not ran across one. I don't think there's one out there. And so when you look at that example we've been describing, the lien statute permits that downstream lower tier contractor or supplier or material provider or equipment lessor the ability to record a lien, even if the amount is not yet due. The deadlines, and we'll discuss, that deserves its own installment of a podcast in and of itself, but they're generally 60 or 90 days. So a lot of our contracts that Blake and I work on, and I think our contractor and owner listeners will appreciate this, they can include pay if paid clauses or pay when paid clauses in Indiana. And, you know, assume that the payment simply hasn't come up yet, hasn't come due, hasn't been paid. That contractor, the person with potential lien rights, really needs to think hard, make a business decision about recording that lien within the prescribed time to preserve the right to be paid, even if they're getting assurances, hey, payment's on the way, you're going to be paid. You still have to, no matter those assurances, you have to record on time. And you can do so regardless of what the contractual documents state, particularly in commercial context. Sometimes it's a little nuanced in residential, but you should always be top of mind as to where you are as to your lien rights, your last date of work.
Yeah. Let's focus on that for a second, though, because I think that's an important point, right? A lot of times, 60 days is in Indiana, 60 days is the trigger, is the deadline. I know that there are some extensions and some things that sometimes different, you know, like you said, the 90 days apply. But generally speaking, 60 days is the rule of thumb that we look to. And when I say 60 days, let's say for the listener, it's 60 days since the last day that particular mechanic, right, worked on the particular parcel, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And so the 60 and 90 days that Chris was mentioning they call them class one and class two. Class one is commercial buildings, and that's the 90 days that he was referencing. Class two is the residential. And then there's some nuances in it, but you can generally look at it in two buckets, commercial or residential. The residential is the shorter time frame. To your question, though, about the date of the last work, it has to be a legitimate bit of work that was done. It can't be, you know, a contractor stopping by the project every once a week to move a ladder or drop off a bucket of bolts, I think is the common reference. It has to be legitimate work that's in furtherance of bettering the property.
And to the original point, a lot of times, 60 days or even 90 days isn't that long in a construction industry. And it very well could be that draws and draw schedules and inspections and appraisals during that construction process could delay payment 60 or 90 days. So like Chris said, the contractor doesn't necessarily know at that mark whether or not they actually have a real legitimate problem that could require a court of law. But still, regardless of what they're talking about, most of them really should throw the lien on at that 90-day mark if they have a problem.
That's right. And imagine the scenario, another frequent scenario is in a project is coming near. You're a particular trade or subcontractor, your scope of work is complete, and there's retainage being withheld. Retainage is very common on construction projects, 2, 5, 10%. Some public works projects have a sliding scale. Some of that's set by Indiana statute. It's a little unique for buildings and projects owned by the government. But if you're not paid and your scope of work is done and you have just retainage out there, that's something that should be you should seek counsel or consider recording a lien if it's getting long on the tooth and you're butting up against that 60 or 90 day mark. There are many different scenarios where these would come into play as you're looking at the potential for lien rights.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and again, that goes back to my warning to our listeners, and I don't do this often, but this lien landscape, this process has a lot of nuance and a lot of reason to have an attorney involved with experience who can help navigate it, especially as the projects get larger and more sophisticated, that involve retainage that doesn't get paid for months after, you know, you potentially have finished your work. So really important that you look to an expert like Chris or Blake, even if you don't think you have a lien, to consult on the process, because what I have found with my construction clients is these things come up rather quickly on them. And by the time they come up, a lot of times, because they're not experienced or they don't have good advice or they don't have a team in place, it's an easy target to miss. So that's good to know. Now, let's talk a little bit. Blake brought up the different types of properties and the different deadlines. Are there any properties that are not subject to lien law? Let's start there. Are there any properties that are exempt completely from a mechanic's ability to lien?
Yeah, Chris may be able to jump in and help me out on this one, but the general rule is most properties are lienable, but there are some that are exempt that usually relate to some public works projects, state-owned land, things of that nature.
Can't lien a bridge.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you can't.
That's my bridge.
Exactly. That's the, but generally 99% of projects that we see outside of, you know, public works projects and things like that are lienable.
Okay. Chris?
Yes. Yeah, so there's that. That's absolutely spot on. That, you know, it's we're generally looking at when we get the call from our clients on the contractor side of the table and lower tier subs under the contractor. We're generally in the neighborhood of it's commercial. We're constructing a project. I provided steel. I've not been paid. I'm the GC working on a new townhome development. I've not been paid. Then we look at residential. A residential in Indiana is one of the nuances where you can have a no lien agreement. And we work, Blake and I work on those quite frequently. There are additional steps that one must take for the owner to have a valid no lien agreement for residential construction. And there are additional considerations for the home builder or for the contractor or for the lower tier subs before they sign that contract that they should be aware of, that that's a potential pitfall. What am I getting into here? Is this a no lien project? So that's a big consideration to keep in mind.
Where do you normally see a no lien agreement? Is it in a commercial setting? Is it in a residential setting?
It used to be you could have a no lien agreement wholesale across any, generally any construction project in Indiana. That is no longer the case. Commercial projects, you can no longer have a no lien agreement. Though if that agreement were to be signed today, and we don't see that hardly at all, Blake and I, in our construction practice, it's technically by statute, I quote, void. That contract is void. Now, residential is where you can have those agreements, but there are additional steps to take. And as I mentioned, if you're the contractor that's looking to do that kind of work, you'd be well to look at the title work for that property if it's a sizable enough job, because you are effectively waiving your right to be paid and you lose that leverage, as Blake mentioned, with not being able to put a lien on the property if you're not paid. The public property, a court summed it up nicely, just as you had, George. Could you imagine the confusion if a contractor that worked on the state house or on a courthouse could foreclose their lien because they weren't paid and then own the building or sell the building, right? So that's obviously not what the General Assembly is going to allow here in Indiana. So you have a different mechanism, and that, again, that deserves its own podcast installment as well. It's essentially, we call it the Little Miller Act, where you can go after a bond or withheld funds. So we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, maybe that'll be episode 3, because I do think we have more to discuss here as we kind of get long in, on time here. Kind of as a final thought, and we've looked today at who's entitled and what properties are subject to it. And I think that there's some more nuance in our next podcast, including for me, I think it would be very beneficial to unpack the monitoring and prevention regime that's out there. We talk about these liens. We talk about how they become a problem for real estate and development. But we also have, because of them, developed an industry around them with title companies, attorneys, appraisers, and others, and general contractors being able to take steps to prevent, right? That notices on site and otherwise, affidavits, sworn statements, other things that we really need to unpack, because it isn't just as simple as a 2-page document gets filed when someone doesn't get paid, when there are draws and construction draws and things that have to be clear before the next draw. A single lien, even a $5,000 or $10,000 lien, can stop a multi-million dollar project from moving forward. So, but as a final thought, guys, as you look at the who and the what, is there a specific type of advice you would give a contractor or someone entitled, a supplier, materialman, laborer, anyone entitled to the lien, as far as what to pay attention to during that period of time?
So a lot of the times that we see these lien issues pop up, it's as the project is getting close to the end. Or maybe your portion of the project is getting toward its end. For instance, if you're the one setting the pad for a commercial building, you're moving a lot of dirt, you're probably working with concrete, you're doing all these sorts of things. And that takes weeks or even months, depending on the size of the project. If you're seeing payment issues up front, or you're noticing things on the project where other trades are being delayed or things seem disorganized, those are the things that should be, you know, pinging the red flags that you need to keep a really close eye on when you're getting close to the end of your work and when the last day that you're doing work is. Because if you're seeing some of these other things slip, you could be the next one, and you don't want to be losing those lien rights by waiting too long. And so I'd say, from a practical perspective for the contractor, the materialman, the supplier, things like that, you know, there's things that you could be keeping an eye on to see if you might be having an issue and if you really need to start counting those days.
Yeah, Chris, any other final thoughts before we sign off?
No, I think that sums it up great. Just keep tabs on project status and where payments are. And if a problem presents itself or there's concern, jump on it as soon as possible to meet that time limitation, because there's steps that are required before you can put together the lien that just frankly take time, right? Getting the correct legal description, things of that nature. So as Blake said, just keeping tabs.
Yeah, I think that's right. And again, as I've said now four times during this podcast, get some experienced attorneys to help you. I know there are sophisticated contractors that have the ability to do this in-house, but they didn't start there. And they almost always have attorneys at the ready in case there are more complicated questions. So, you know, I just can't stress enough for our listener, this is the type of thing that a few hundred dollar consult can go a long way to preparing you for potentially what is an inevitability and making it a seamless process to get your money. So thanks, guys. I appreciate you being on again today. Look forward to another episode on this one. I can't say we've ever had a topic that we could go three episodes, but I think this one we could probably go five, just because it's so, you know, there's so many nuances to these liens. They are just so powerful. So thanks again to you guys for being on. Thanks to the listener for tuning in and listening to our podcast. Hopefully you found it beneficial, and we look forward to seeing you again very soon.
Thanks, George.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Krieg DeVault podcast series, brought to you by Krieg DeVault, a leading business-focused law firm. Stay connected by subscribing to our podcast on your preferred platform, ensuring you're always in the loop for upcoming episodes. Anywhere across the nation, Krieg DeVault is your trusted law firm for providing practical legal advice that takes in the big picture without losing sight of the details. Learn more at KriegDeVault.com.